I'm Baratunde Thurston, and this is Spit, an iHeartRadio podcast with 23andMe. This is the podcast that explores how DNA is changing our lives and the world around us. In this latest episode of Spit, we sit down with brothers Darren and Chuck Chris of the band Computer Games and AJ Jacobs, journalist and author of It's All Relative, to discuss how we are all family, like it or not. We talk about how each is attempting to create a more connected world, the Chris brothers through their music, and Jacobs through research and science on his quest to unite the entire human race in one all-encompassing family tree.
The way that I define family is, you know, we are surrounded with people in our lives that we consider cousins and close loved ones that are closer to us than blood family.
Mm. The Judge Judy effect. I always hated her. I found her just incredibly abrasive. Then I found out through DNA in this tree, I'm her like sixth cousin. And it actually, weirdly enough, irrationally, I know, it made me switch my perspective. I'm like, oh, Judge Judy, Cousin Judy, she's not so bad.
AJ, Chuck, Darren, welcome.
Yo, that was so here. That was so regal the way you read that.
Your voice is kind of a nice baritone.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Baritune day.
So we're going to talk with AJ first. AJ, first of all, it's good to see you again.
Great to see you.
After, what is it, 7 best-selling books you have out there and something like that?
Not quite, but I'll take it.
Okay.
The fact checkers can figure it
That's
out.
That's right.
Multiple best-selling books.
And you have engaged on this quest to help build a world family tree.
Right.
Can you break down the concept of a world family tree?
Yeah, this is an amazing phenomenon I stumbled on a few years ago. And it is the biggest family tree ever. And it's not really, tree is not the right word. It's a forest. Because it's not hundreds or thousands. It is millions of people.
Wait, how many millions?
Right now it's at 125 million. Like, while I said that, they probably added like 3 or 4.
Okay.
Yeah, it is dozens of countries, all ethnicities, you know, vegetarians, meat eaters, you name it, all in one family tree. And the goal is that in a few years, we are actually going to be able to unite everyone on planet Earth. So 7 billion cousins.
So this is the cousin pod. We're all cousins.
Oh, yeah. I call everyone cousin. That's right.
How many relatives do you have?
Well, it depends how you define it. You know, I have 7 billion cousins.
Right.
The book actually started because I got this email out of the blue from this guy, and he said, you don't know me, but I'm your 12th cousin. And I thought, of course, you know, he's going to say, please wire $10,000 to my Nigerian bank
account. Give me something. Yeah. Yeah.
But it turned out he was legitimate. He's one of these researchers and scientists building this family tree. So I have about 125 million cousins all around the world. And it is a wild feeling. And it's everybody. You know, when I stumbled onto this, I just spent a week figuring out how I'm related to everyone on Earth. Like, you know, all my favorite celebrity, like David Bowie, Darren and Chuck, of course, how I'm related to them.
What do you, have you proven that you're related to them yet?
I actually looked you up. I'm still working on you guys, but I have hundreds of others. Like,
what about me?
You are not on it. I don't know what's up with that.
Oh, boy.
We got to get you in. For instance, Barack Obama, he is my 5th great aunt's husband's brother's wife's 7th great nephew.
That
is
the actual.
It sounds.
No, that's real. That is
like a riddle.
Verified. Yeah. That is, you know, we're very close. We're very close. We're
trying. Yeah.
It's not all good news because you also are related to all, you know, I'm also cousins with Jeffrey Dahmer.
Right.
But that's through my wife's side. I want to keep that.
Wow. Throwing the life partner under the genetic bus.
That's right. Yeah. Be careful with her.
Yeah. So Chuck and Darren, can you share some of what you know about your family history? I mean, AJ's taken us through the widest possible definition of family. You all are definitely brothers. You grew up together. Where did that happen? And what are some of the things you heard and learned about your family?
As far as we know, we're brothers.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're pretty sure. It's pretty divisive. When we were kids, people thought we were twins. Then as we got older, people were like, they can't believe we're related. But as you get older and you start experiencing other people's idea of family and how you identify that, you realize that everyone really has a different sense of what that is. And our mom was the youngest of 7.
Okay.
From the Philippines. And so a lot of our cousins and extended family, we didn't really know growing up because they were just on the other side of the world. And, you know, we didn't grow up in the age of social media and everything. So it wasn't until later in life we kind of connected with them. But because, you know, she was so young, our cousins were much older, and we were kind of on our own little secluded, like, island.
Yeah, and we didn't really know our grandparents. I think they're just a little too past by the time we came into the picture.
Yeah.
So they're kind of these mythical kind of
creatures. Our grandfather was our only, like, blood grandparent that we had. But by the time we entered the world and we met him, you know, he was unfortunately really deep in Alzheimer's. So we didn't really get I never grew up with the grandparents' experience, which is to say that, like, our nuclear family between myself, Chuck, mom and dad, like, that's our family. It makes Christmas very easy. However, I'm getting married in a little bit. And
congratulations.
I'm marrying a Jewish girl from Long Island. So there's a lot of family.
Yeah.
A lot of cousins.
A lot of family.
You're merging with a larger family.
Yeah, which
tree.
Is huge. And sort of her definition of, like, what family is and who is part of their life. There are so many cousins. Like, I joke it's like that episode of Friends where Joey has, like, the... like 8 or 9 identical sisters, and, like, they can't tell them apart.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, for the first many years we were together, I honestly could not tell these cousins apart. But because it was just, there's a whole different family tradition. The sort of history, that AJ, you'd probably be able to speak more to, but, you know, a lot of nomadic Sephardic Jews that are coming from certain parts of the world that immigrated to this place and that place.
Yeah.
And so many cousins, and the families are big, and her grandmother was, like, the youngest of 12 or something crazy like that. So it's just massive, 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 which is completely juxtaposed to Chuck and I's experience, which is very small and contained. And then on our father's side, it was quite small, you know, same thing.
Yeah, it was just dad and his sister.
Yeah.
Like, our grandparents are kind of these, because we never knew him, everything kind of gets a little more epic,
like, larger
scale
than life. So
when you hear about, like, our grandfather on our mom's side was, like, a sea captain.
Yeah, he was a pilot.
And when you're a kid, you think of, like, a pirate, like,
yeah, he was a straight
discovering
up,
like new islands.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
He was probably just, like, driving a ship.
He's a ship driver.
He's a ship driver. Yeah. Like, but you're like, a sea captain, amazing.
Yeah. And married men.
Do you feel like you have gotten? You are good sailors. You're good.
I'm a pretty terrible sailor.
Well, yeah, we get pretty, like, motion sick. It sucks.
I've definitely thrown up at the side of moving vessel before.
So have I. Maybe not because of the ocean per se, but
maybe because of the liquids inside of
you. A nice combination of the two things.
And our grandfather on our dad's side worked for General Motors. He was
a very American
salesman in Detroit.
I think our entire family is like the merging of the two worlds between, like, sort of upper middle class working, you know, he was a successful car salesman.
Okay.
Cadillac dealership, like, in and out of Detroit. Like,
literally your father's Cadillac.
Yeah,
yeah,
totally. It's totally that sort of cliche. That was our grandfather. He was in, you know, when Detroit was kind of at the automotive epicenter of the nation, he was kind of in that zeitgeist. Then he moved to Rhode Island, I think. You can even hear in my voice the uncertainty. There is a certain amount of, like, mystery and stuff that I haven't, like, pinned down. That Chuck and I are always like, we gotta sort this stuff out. But we'll be out to dinner with some friend of ours, and then, you know, as a sidebar, my dad will be talking to a friend of ours, being like, "Well, you know, back in blah blah, that's when I what." But Chuck and I are like, "Wait, what? You lived where? When?
Like,
who?
That was ages ago.
This was ages ago. This is before, you know, you
before,
guys.
Yeah.
So, you know, the way they have kind of defined family for us was sort of just like our crew, which is to no disrespect, no disinterest in what came before, but that was just kind of the realm we grew up in. And so, you know, same with our mom, who I grew up in a time in the Philippines where there was a real idolization of Western culture and the United States. And I was saying earlier how I think the way we've come into the world is a distinctly American tale of, you know, a young woman who really, like, persevered to come to this country and, you know, had her fair share of trials and tribulations. I mean, this is the mid-late 70s. She's a young woman. She's an immigrant. A lot of cards are stacked against her.
Yeah.
And she got a job, you know, working is like whatever low level entryway where our dad worked, and their affair in the office
definitely made it spicy.
Lazy shopping is what my wife and I, because we met at work too. Oh. And by the way, I will say, you mentioned that you're getting married. You might want to have your fiance take one of the DNA tests, because when I took 23andMe, they send you a list of hundreds of cousins. And I was going through it. I didn't recognize many names. And then I got to one name, and it was Julie Jacobs, my wife. So my wife is my sixth cousin. And
six is a good distance.
Yeah.
So for the brothers, it sounds like your parents chose to kind of restart the family tree.
Kind of.
In some sense.
You know, like,
your mother being one of seven, but you weren't connected to the other six. in terms of your own childhood experiences?
We had cousins in Seattle and parts of Los Angeles, but I think it's more to do with her mom. She just really loved this. She gave us and our dad like all the attention. It was just about the four of us. There is a distance between the Philippines and San Francisco, which kind of made our family background like this mysterious thing. I only recently got really into it. You know, last time Chuck and I, we went to see mom and dad, and we went through a bunch of old documents and papers and stuff from our grandfather's past, and it kind of opened up that box of mom's past. And I think just out of simplicity, when people ask our background, just for shorthand, we say Filipino-Irish because it's just easier. We say our dad's Irish, which he is, but it's probably like a pretty diverse Anglo mutt of like Dutch, like who knows what's in there.
There's a lot of wars in that background.
Yeah, exactly. Right? A lot of white people killing each other and like making things weird and different, and who knows what brought him and his family across the ocean. But with mom, we say Filipino, but the Philippines have had such a crazy, there's so much Spanish blood there.
Japanese and Chinese, a lot of Chinese.
So like our grandmother was, I think, half Chinese. So there, like, there's a lot of Chinese.
We'll find out stuff. Soon enough.
Yeah, that's what mom said. She was like, you know, you're Chinese. I was like, what? You've never brought this up? She's like, oh, I just never thought I needed to. It's like, I thought you knew that.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm from the Philippines. That was going to come up at some point. Yeah.
How do you negotiate the World Cup in this family?
Luckily, I'm an idiot about soccer. I just when it comes down to the championship games, I just pick a side, and then whichever one's has the rowdier bar.
Do you have
drinking
a
helps.
Approach?
Yeah, drinking helps.
Yeah, we'll drink with whoever's.
Yeah, whoever's the most excited about their team. Yeah,
and then AJ, you know, your world family reunion, trying to get as many of these members of the global family tree together. Was that as well like a United Nations,
yeah,
I imagine?
That was the hope, that it would be like crazy diverse. And the idea came because I figured out I had all of these cousins, and I thought, why not throw a party? And I invited all 7 billion cousins. We did not get 100% turnout.
And I did not get my invitation. You already acknowledged.
You're not related.
You're not related. You're not part of the family.
Oh, he's
I
in
just
there.
Wanted
he's
to
in
be
there.
A cuz, y'all.
But that was exactly it. And that's, I know, a big theme of your show and a big theme of my book is that this world family tree has all these political, racial, and identity impact, and hopefully for the good, when we can see concretely how closely we're related. So I hated the event because I was so stressed out for, like, you know, is a drone gonna fall on someone's head? But other people seemed to have a good time, and it was the weirdest conglomeration of people. You had rabbis, ministers, priests.
What was a least expected thing that happened at this gathering? I mean, I imagine you had objectives,
right,
and things that you assumed or hoped would happen, but what surprised you?
Well, then we got people from all over the world. I mean, it was in New York, so we had 4,000 people in New York, and we had 40 simultaneous parties in New Zealand and, the Philippines, I think they had one. And so the book is sort of about building up to this. We did have Sister Sledge get on and sing We Are Family.
We are family.
You can say that. You guys.
Yeah.
I will say this, just to be totally honest.
All my millions, cousins, and me.
They changed it.
Oh,
they
nice.
Did change it.
Look at this.
They changed the lyrics. It was not all of Sister Sledge. It was 3 of the 4, 75%, because apparently they don't get along with one of their sisters, which is just heartbreaking.
Well,
today.
Like a real family.
You know,
like
a real family, exactly.
Yeah. Keeping it real.
We are a real family.
Keeping it 75.
Exactly.
We are family, except for that one person who we don't sing about.
So it was a crazy event, and the idea was these guys would have been perfect, because you've got, like, you know, of the pie graph, you must have like 14 slices, which is, you know, your work family, the Glee family. Jenna Ushkowitz was there, mm-hmm. and I loved her because she is born in Korea but adopted by a Catholic family who used to be Jewish, hence her name Ushkowitz. And then
the Polish last name.
And I think her half brother is of Puerto Rican descent.
I mean, that brings up a whole other idea of, which is something that I really subscribe to, and I talked about this a lot with this last role that I was doing, because I played somebody that was infamously somebody who was known for something deplorable, right? And I kept reminding people
referring to your role.
To this role on Assassination of Gianni Versace.
Congratulations on the Emmy.
Thank you very much. The idea that we are all more similar than not. Mm-hmm. What is it? The whatever percentage that makes us different is
0.5.
Is 0.5. So while that's small in number, it's large in content, ideology, a lot of stuff that amounts to a whole lot. So mm-hmm. that's the same thing I always say about people, regardless of actual genetic similarity. Like, we all have day-to-day similarities. It's just the genetic tissue. What I'm getting around to is my sort of view of connectivity with people has a lot less to do with the genetics. And the way that I define family is, you know, we are surrounded with people in our lives that we consider, you know, cousins and close loved ones that are closer to us than blood family.
Right.
The reason why I'm bringing this up after you saying Jenna is that, you know, that's an excellent example of somebody who is not blood related to her parents, but like, she is.
Right. Yeah. Well, I love that. I mean, in the book, I talk about logical family and biological family. Yeah. And the logical family could be people you work with. And actually, Jenna produced a film.
Which is
an awesome film.
It's an amazing story.
And it's about these two Korean women who were born in Korea, but they were both adopted by Western families, one in Europe, one in the United States. They didn't know each other existed, but they had a mutual acquaintance on Facebook. And he was like, "You guys look weirdly similar." Like, same.
And that wasn't racist.
Yeah.
Well, maybe.
Or it might have been initially. Have been, but
that was
like
the joke that we had, because I was kind of witnessing this as a third party.
Yeah.
Right.
So one of the girls is an actress, and she had sort of presence in film and TV.
Profile,
and then so somebody who was seeing this, like, it wasn't just like a picture, like, "Oh, you guys look similar." It's like, "You guys have the same, like,
mannerisms.
Like, what the hell? This
the
is
freckles.
Crazy. The freckles, like." Well, it was warranted.
Yeah,
you know, like, what the hell?
But it relates to your point, because they got together, they loved each other, and they tried to contact their biological mom.
Okay.
And she wanted nothing to do with them. But what I loved was what one of them said was that she's okay because she feels she has like five other moms. She's got her adoptive mom, her twins' adoptive mom. She's an actress, so she has a manager who she calls a momager.
Right.
So I love the idea. Yeah, we don't have to consider DNA as the only way to define family.
But it is a nice reminder, I guess, especially when you have nothing to do with somebody else. It's a polite, you know, sort of cosmic reminder.
Well, and I think there is evidence that this has an effect. There's a study at Harvard about a year ago where they took Palestinians and Israelis.
Okay.
And they showed one group how closely they were related genetically.
Mm-hmm.
And the other, they didn't. And the group they showed how closely they were actually treated with more kindness. They were more respectful, more open in negotiation. And I've seen it anecdotally, personally. I call it the Judge Judy effect. I chose Judge Judy because I always hated her. Like, I found her just incredibly abrasive. Then I found out through DNA and this tree, I'm her like sixth cousin. And it actually, weirdly enough, irrationally, I know, it made me switch my perspective. I'm like, oh, Judge Judy, Cousin Judy, she's not so bad. Well, she's a sweetheart.
You're a much nicer cousin than I am.
You're
predisposed
to nepotism, we are learning from AJ Jacobs.
Yeah, this is more like an inside look in your mind, I think.
Which are a lot of AJ's books, to be fair. Yeah. But he exposes us to ourselves as well, which is why you're here. Chuck, does the idea of finding cousins that you didn't choose that may be genetically connected, is that interesting to you, threatening to you, totally exciting, or something else?
I think it's exciting. I'm always happy to meet new people in the tree. You know, I didn't meet some of our cousins that we're closest to now because of like a family feud or whatever until I was in our 20s, and now they're like our closest cousins.
Yeah.
And so that was like a kind of an eye-opening thing where, you know, you share this genetic link in a very real one. You don't get to meet each other until you're adults, and it's kind of crazy. But
yeah, that was a really nice sort of surprise. There was some cousins that we just didn't know at all.
If there's more of those, I'm
yeah, hell yeah,
I'm very happy to it.
You're ready for more cousins.
Very ready.
Yeah.
And it also helps that it wasn't that many. We didn't have that many.
But I mean, even now, you know, I have this like interesting family dynamic in my own personal life where I have two kids from a previous marriage, and then now I have a new relationship, and she has kids too, and we're living together, and we're doing this Brady Bunch thing where we have, you know, five kids between us, and we're about to have a baby of our own soon.
Yeah,
that's insane. Like, just to take on all this new family, and it really does become bigger than the gene pool, because I treat them like family. We took the oldest daughter to go see
BTS
at Citi Field. Yeah, this idea of having this extended family and you can kind of treat it as your own. Maybe because we're so connected, there's just this understanding.
And I love that the idea of family has gotten so broad. And the family trees of the future are just going to be so wild and gnarled and mixed. And I love, like, you know, there's the sperm donors who have all of these kids that they have a word for it. It's called dibblings, donor siblings. They're half brothers and half sisters.
Wow.
And they have
we did an episode touching on that. Yeah, yeah.
And they had they have Facebook pages and they get together. They just legalized in England. They just had the first kid who has three legal parents because they took the egg and they took out a little bit of the DNA because it had disease. And they put in a third person's, a guy's DNA. So the baby has two dads and one mom. Imagine in the future, you know, you could have like, I was talking to one of my eight moms and she was telling me, you know, it's going to be wild.
So biologically, we're having more flexible, expansive definitions of family with this almost engineered human you just described. And then certainly from a personal choice perspective, we have our chosen family, our logical family, you put it.
I'm obsessed with that ideological family. I think I'm much more on page with that than biological.
The combined effect of both is an expanded sense of who we're related to, who we're connected to, and maybe who we will forgive if we don't like their attitude because now it turns out they're our cousins.
Right.
So I'm more forgiving of Judge Judy now because she's cousin Judy.
I am at least. Yeah. I mean, that's what I love. It's sort of the idea is the more in your family, as my eighth cousin, three times removed, Hillary Clinton used to say, it takes a village.
Which she took from a common African proverb.
That's true.
Who are other cousins.
Who are my cousins.
True. It's always a cousin.
I love that idea. The bigger the family, the better.
Yeah.
I mean, you get a lot of flack. That's why you're seeing such pushback.
I think many of us get attached to the division, right? It's how we decide resources, who gets promoted, who we spend time with. And at a national level, like who gets land, right? Who gets entry? And so if you are less able to draw that line and say that's an other, that's a monster, that's something to be dehumanized,
right?
But that's a member of my family, that messes with power.
Yeah.
And most people who have it don't want to give it up.
Totally.
Yeah.
I mean, I interviewed Henry Louis Gates for this, and he talks about how there's no such thing as racial purity, but it goes beyond that. I mean, you take 23andMe and you see we have Neanderthal DNA because you're like 800th great-grandpa had sex with a Neanderthal. You got to open your heart to the Neanderthals. You're not even one species. You're a mix of species. No offense. I'm saying that with love.
No. I'm sure Grandpa was a generous Neanderthal.
Gentle.
A thoughtful, community-minded, civically engaged.
Always remember birthdays.
I want to get to some pros and cons and sort of talk about a future in the age of genetic testing and everyone being able to know their genome. And we have this beautiful implication of genetic testing, which it's giving us this scientific evidence that we're all a mix, right? There is no genetic purity, as Dr. Gates said. And a lot of studies that you cited, AJ, show that we do increase our tolerance for each other when we realize, oh, you're more of a brethren, less of an enemy. Now, we're coming off of our Peace Day episode of this podcast, and we debated what it takes to make peace. And the resounding answer was that when we understand that we're 99.5% the same, focusing on that versus the 0.5 is going to help lead us to a more peaceful world. I want to ask, because of the work that you've done, AJ, with bringing people around the world together, do you believe the studies, right? Do you think that we can continue in this direction by knowing that connection more deeply and I suppose accepting it, that we will actually be more peaceful, that we will actually be more welcoming of each other.
I love that episode, by the way. And I agree with the general idea. I am an optimist, a techno-optimist. So I do think overall it will help. And you're seeing that sometimes. You know, I've read stories that are almost like a J.J. Abrams screenplay of like a white nationalist taking these tests and finding out they're part Jewish or part African-American and being like, you know what? Maybe my worldview is not the best.
Yeah.
And they're making a change. Now, it's not perfect. It's not kumbaya because you get some white nationalists who take it and they either want to see how pure they are, quote, like what their percentage is.
So it's like a a contest, like a scoring contest.
Exactly.
Who can score the highest
right.
in the genetic test?
Or they're in denial and say, oh, this is a multicultural conspiracy. So I'm hopeful.
Which technically, I guess it is. Like many cultures are involved in understanding the human genome.
It's true. It's the best kind of conspiracy.
Yeah, a fact-based one.
Yeah. So anyway, I do think in the end it will prove to be a good thing. And you know, even I took one. I'm very jealous of you guys because you've got so much fun stuff going on. I am 97% Jewish, but about 3% Arab Egyptian. So I like that I have the Middle East conflict in my body like, going on right now.
You were saying you liked about yourself that you are this combination.
Yeah.
Like, that you can draw from many different histories.
Yeah, I really do love it. As a kid, I really loved it. Also, growing up in the Bay Area was really cool because, I mean, you don't know until you go out into the world, but it was a pretty mixed group of kids. You know, California is, you know, San Francisco itself is a very vibrant Latin community, very vibrant Asian, particularly Chinese culture, and just kind of growing up around other kids who had stories from so many different places and. I just thought that was so rad that like the whole world was kind of at my fingertips just as, you know, just by way of people having decided to have sex, have kids and settle in San Francisco, you know, so I didn't have to go anywhere. I had to kind of like learn about all these cultures and things like just from being around them, which I, you know now is not the case with the rest of the country. And that's how, you know, our white nationalists kind of grow up because they have no other access to sort of the larger world experience.
Yeah, that mix and that combination was normal. It sounds
yeah, it was
like,
normal
both
to
of
us.
You as
yeah,
children.
Nobody tried to make that happen. Nobody tried to give us a worldview. It was just there. And so there's a sort of normalization to the eclecticism of the cultures in our life growing up that I think served me well. You know, as I got older.
But that's what makes it so interesting, though, is when you think about, I guess, purity. I think about this a lot in just like music or something when something in music is purely like a country western song or purely a rock and roll song, and it gets kind of stale. Mm. Like you don't want to keep listening to it. You want to keep moving forward and you keep wanting to introduce other elements. And that's what making modern music is about, is not really just sticking to like, oh, well, being a purist about
I love
how
that
something
idea.
Is
there's,
you
this
know?
Is an excellent point, Chuck. There is a melting pot, not only in the genetic melting pot, but in the cultural melting pot. If you looked at genre like race, you know, there are the things that make them distinctly categorical because of certain things that hit you. Just like race, you'd say, okay, the color of their skin or susceptibility to I don't know, whatever diseases or something like that. But in music, yeah, okay, cool. So if it's a waltz, okay, that's in one
waltz.
Thing.
This
if it's
yeah,
if,
this is the waltz.
This is reggaeton. Yeah.
And waltz should be the only music to ever exist.
Ever exist. I'm a waltz purist. But we, you know, there's so many things that, you know, when people get really up in arms about even cultural appropriation in music about, well, this person is trying to do this. And I think what's would be so beautiful about culture is that it's such a fluid flowing thing that, you know, when you say, oh, well, so-and-so is stealing from the Beatles. It's like, yeah, well, these kids from Northern England were stealing from Delta Blues guys from the South. And those guys in the South who, like, basically the sort of turning point of Black culture defining music, like American music, they're taking it from a whole other thing, which would have been like hundreds of years of slave chants and songs that have in their bones, then who knows where that came from. And there's sort of a trade-off between all these different people. There's this weird thing where the Brits love soul music.
Mm-hmm.
And the Brits have taken American traditions and just crushed it for a long time. And I was thinking a lot about this as typical, and this is in a conversation of genetics and race and where voices come
They've
from.
They've gotten pretty good at like tea and curry as well.
Yeah, 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 exactly. Which is a whole other conversation. Yeah. I always wonder, if you closed your eyes and we didn't know what we knew about Adele, you would close your eyes and go, is this an African woman singing? Is this somebody that has Black genealogy? And you go, no, this is a woman that has been reared on the great music, which has really been amplified by many iconic, particularly Black identity voices. That is as an undeniable sound. But then you kind of go back to like, that was a sound that these white nationals were afraid of back in the day. And you think of people listening to Elvis, it sounds like Black records, right? And that was a big thing because like, we can't play this. But then all of a sudden, because he was white, it could put it in this larger zeitgeist that was somehow more suddenly more accessible to a larger audience. But then I was listening to a group called the Ink Spots. The Ink Spots were a very popular quartet in the 40s, and they sang a lot of standards, and these were four African-American men. And if you close your eyes, these sound like four kind of old white dudes singing. Hmm. And those records were played because, you know, at the time we didn't have the exposure of knowing what these guys look like. So what I'm saying is that there's this weird sort of transference of people aren't trying to appropriate sound or culture. It's just what sounds good and what touches you and what moves your soul in whatever X factor way. And that comes from all different kinds of identity and race and culture. I'd guarantee you the Beatles didn't sit down and go, I know it'd be cool. Let's try and sound like dudes from Delta Blues guys. They just thought, man, this is cool. That's it. Like, they weren't like calculating how culture and race could factor into their music. That just whatever touches you, whatever moves you is what you put out. Yeah. There are so many wonderful things that so many different cultures have been able to contribute to the larger zeitgeist of popular culture, particularly in music. And it's wonderful when they all cross over. You know, when you think of, like, what are great moments of that? Like La Bamba, you suddenly have Latin culture being rock and roll. You have Walk This Way. You suddenly have hip hop and rock and roll doing the tango. And you have all these things where that are now standards, and those just sound like everything now. And there's this sort of mono genre that's happening of everything. And I think that is kind of what is going to inevitably happen with genetics. It's this sort of transference and confluence of everything, and hopefully all the positive things kind of coming into one.
You brought us back to genetics. I actually want to bring us back to music, because we're touching on this theme of inclusivity. But in your music, both of you have said things about inclusivity. Darren, you said you don't like labels, right? Yeah. And I think maybe waltz, you know, is a trigger word for you, right? Chuck, you said you're trying to make music that is inclusive and unapologetically fun. And just how does this notion of inclusivity for both of you and in your band together play into your music, the music that you make, not just how you kind of think about music metaphorically?
I think the more it's the point was that we didn't want to make something that you have to like certain education to listen to. Like, oh, you won't get this because, you know, like there's too many layers. And sometimes there's a little bit of pretension that happens with some music that's put out. And I'm certainly guilty of it myself, which I think was why with this band, we wanted to do something that was just a little more on the nose and fun.
Yeah, where the context doesn't have to feed into why you're liking something. You know, if you go into a museum and you see a piece of art and you don't really get it, and then you look at the plaque and it says, oh, well, so-and-so was in a manic rage after his lover, you know, cheated on him, and he was in the middle of a crazy mescaline trip, and he created this masterpiece. And you're like, okay, cool, yeah, I can see where, okay. And you kind of connect the dots because of the context, right? But if that plaque wasn't there and you just looked at it, what effect would it have had on you?
Yeah, if it was on a subway platform instead of a museum.
Exactly. Yeah, you're already at the museum, so you're already kind of predisposed to sort of venerating this piece. Whereas, you know, for us, we really wanted to make it context-free and just do what music does best. You don't have to speak the language. You can feel it, and just hopefully it makes you smile or it makes you feel something on some visceral level that we're not really in control of, but you really kind of hope for the best. So, you know, we just try and make things as fun as humanly possible. That's a nice way to work when you're in the studio, when you're like, is this too cheesy? Yes. Great. Good. Onward. Onward with that.
I read an amazing article just a couple weeks ago about the racist roots of country of square dancing. Did you read this? That it was.
I mean, I don't doubt it, because I feel everything has racist roots.
Somewhere along America. The line. Yeah, there's
but
some kind of.
But detail. It was Henry Ford thought jazz was the creation of Jews and blacks, and he thought that it was terrible and promoted immorality. So he poured millions into promoting square dancing as this sort of upstanding white alternative. And then the irony is that square dancing, a lot of it was call and response, which was based on African slave culture. So he was appropriating black music without even realizing it.
And trying to crush black music.
Yeah.
Amazing. AJ, you have said that part of your goal, humbly stated, with your project to connect to everyone in the Big Family Tree was world peace.
Right. Achieved.
Right. We did it.
Well, because I'm feeling these shared threads, and I think this is really a good pairing, the Chris Brothers and Mr. Jacobs here. because of that feeling that Darren just described that is accessible, regardless of language capabilities, or because of this reduced tension due to family knowledge from your world tree, the world peace goal. Can you just talk about that came from and where it stands?
Even back when I got that email 4 years ago, I was freaking out about tribalism and the divisiveness. And this was like a little bright spot. It was like, oh my God, we are all connected. That is wild. Finally, science, DNA, the internet is able to show us exactly how. And I thought, you know, if we can latch onto that, we can, you know, scientists talk about the family bias and that you are more prone to treat family better than strangers, even if it's like 17th cousin, you know, and it's not perfect, as we saw with Sister Sledge, as I see with my kids clawing each other's eyes out. But overall, we do treat family better. So that was sort of the goal. And it was sort of tongue in cheek. You know, we're not going to get world, but it's a nudge in the right direction. And I loved what you both were saying about music, because at the Global Family Reunion, the moment that I feel that was most united was when 75% of Sister Sledge was singing We Are Family, and everyone was singing along in all, like, in 40 different countries. It was quite moving. And I do think music, that you were able to do it. You were able to link genetic mixing and music mixing, and that this is sort of a path to unity. So I thought that was lovely.
Okay, it's the office birthday.
Yeah.
And somebody goes, happy birthday. I think 50% of the room will go, to you. Right, because you have a good ear. The other 50%, and my numbers are fudged, might go, to you. A little off. Yeah. Now, the 50% that was on key might not necessarily be musicians,
right,
or particularly good singers, or have no ambitions to do music. But I think there is an ear genome, because I meet a lot of people,
yeah,
church or places, you know, where people are singing kind of like, you know, not professionally, but they have a good, like, our dad has a good ear. He's like, I'm not a musician. People are like, oh, you guys must have music in your bones. And I'm like, my dad's not a musician, but I know that dude has a good ear. Yeah. And I want to know the genetics of ear. Mm. I think it is a gene.
We've talked about these positive possibilities of unity, of connection, of inclusiveness through music, through genetics, and yet we persist in division. And yet we still feel threatened by other. And so I want to know how we contend with the reality of that negative, right? It's a fact, 0.5%, but it's also a fact, civil wars and division and exclusion and discrimination. And so how do you wrestle with or reconcile your belief in the unity of the global family tree and the reality of the world?
I think it just really depends on what your personal experience of the world is, which is totally like out of all of our hands. Again, let's talk about the culture, the way how some people can be really moved or offended or lifted by some kind of cultural use in another thing. You know, if you are a deep Latin reggaeton drummer, or this is your family's livelihood or something, and then you hear some artist that might not necessarily be part of that tradition using it, you can go two ways. You might feel elated that now you're being represented by, you know, another thing, or that there's an expansion of this thing. Or the other side, which is where I think it can get really dark, is if people really want to feel like it is theirs, and that it's something that is what defines them. So how can I define myself if someone's just going to use it willy-nilly? And I understand that fear. Like, I get that. I don't want to, like, put that person under the bus. It's like why we are proud of our heritages and our cultures, because, you know, it's something that is part of our lives. And you have this fear that this other thing doesn't understand it and will misuse it. And this gets very complicated. So, yeah. I mean, I think at a root, that's where that division happens. And I don't know what the answers are, how you reconcile that.
I've got one suggestion, which I think meeting people in person is so powerful. And that's what I tried to do with the reunion, but also some stories I covered in the book, like this one man who's a weatherman in Texas. Through DNA testing, he found his biological mom and he tracked her down. And she was, he's gay and married, and she's an evangelical Christian. And it was really awkward at first when they met. But over the months, she's become much more accepting. And I think that really is. Like, you can see someone as the other if you never meet them. It's much easier. Mm. But once you meet them, it becomes clear, oh, we're both just human/Neanderthals. So I do think that is the key. Get out of your silo.
Exactly. I think there's a difference between pride and sharing what you experience. And,
yeah.
people are kind of, I guess, inherently competitive about their experience being the best one. And, you know, and it's more about sharing your experience and being open to that sharing.
I'm hearing some themes in it just to kind of wrap up that point. And that fear is a big driver of it, right? There's this combination of fear with possession, as you described it, Darren, and also scarcity, right? Yeah. There's only so much to go around. So if you have some, I can't. And if you have some of what it means to be American, I can't have it. So we're afraid, as opposed to sharing and inclusiveness and like, oh, we can just make it bigger. We can make more of it. We can make more music. We can make more humans. We can make maybe less Neanderthal. I don't know if we can bring them back.
But you're right. The pie can get bigger.
The pie can get bigger. We can all have, you know, various slices, to return to your earlier metaphor. I want to ask you on the way out, what are you working on next? What should our listeners tune into to keep track of you?
Well, I am continuing. I have another book that's different, but the theme is the same of connectivity and 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, and everyone is Kevin Bacon. And the book is called Thanks a Thousand, and it comes out now. And it is about, I take my morning cup of coffee and I try to go around the world and thank every single person who made it possible. So the barista, the farmer, but also, you know, the truck driver, the guy who made the road, the guy who painted the yellow line.
The ship driver.
Oh, the ship driver. Right. Yes, thank you to your grandpa.
Yeah.
He was a big part of it.
He really was. You're welcome.
Yeah.
See, we got a thanks right here.
On behalf of our grandfather.
There you go.
You're absolutely welcome.
Tell him I love my coffee.
It was our pleasure.
our grandfather is actually Kevin Bacon.
Yeah.
Yes. So that works out.
It all works out.
Yeah.
And what about you, Chris Brothers? What are you working on?
We have some new computer game songs coming out in the fall.
Yeah, in the fall, if not earlier next year, somewhere in the next few months.
All right.
Coming soon.
Coming soon to ears near you.
Inspired by today's episode or topics, millions of people have discovered their DNA stories with 23andMe. Meet Angelina, who, like Darren and Chuck, A.J. Jacobs, Pete Wentz, and many others, has sought to discover how the science stacked up against the stories she's been told, and how it could fill in some missing information on her paternal side.
Being Black and our Blackness is rooted in the culture. That history wasn't just in my neighborhood, it was in my house. My mom was very firm in my Blackness and her Blackness. People would tell me I was crazy for calling myself Black. My father was absent from pretty much the beginning of my life. Like, I don't know my father's race and ethnicity. You can't get any more knowing about yourself than processing your DNA. I decided to take the test. I thought I would be like 80% African, and I'm not. I learned that my father had South Asian roots, heavy Native American roots, and that felt exciting. I feel so comfortable in my skin. We are so much more alike than we are different. It enhances conversations if we aren't looking at each other through the lens of what stereotype and what box I put you in. I feel very much at peace with my identity and who I am as a woman. I feel complete.
Curious about your DNA story? Go to 23andme.com to learn more. And if you enjoyed today's episode of Spit, share it with a friend and be sure to leave a review. If you want to hear more surprising stories about how we're all related, search and follow Spit on iHeartRadio or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Spit is an iHeartRadio podcast with 23andMe. I'm Baratunde Thurston. You can find out more about me at baratunde.com or sign up for my text messages. Just hit me up at 202-902-7949. Put hashtag Spit Podcast in your message so I know where you came from.